Yatesky Pelletier Yinishe Mai Deshkizni initially Billigana Bushine Keenla Chitney Dashache Billigana Dashanelli. Welcome back to Res Ball. It's our weekly Pistons pod. Andy and I this week discuss the rumors, reports that the Pistons could hire a president of basketball operations. What does that mean? We'll break it down for you. We also talk about Malachi Flynn's unexpected 50-point bonanza. And then I sound the red alarms on Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren. So let's get started. We are almost at the finish line of the 2023-2024 NBA season for maybe the historically worst Detroit Pistons team ever in their history of their franchise. Before we go into the fan barometer, Andy, let everybody know where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at D_D_Pistons_fan. I think you said this maybe a few pods ago, but it's like, please God, just let this season end. Just let it end.
No, that wasn't me. That was a tweet we read from Amari Senko for the second. Like, this is how the rest of the games are going to go. Just let the season end. Yeah, we couldn't agree more. We're recording this on April 4th, 2024, just so you know. Let's look at the fan barometer. We got Brady Fred at Brady_Fred. He says, turns out, quote, James Wiseman looked good in February and March, unquote, was this year's version of Killian Hayes looked good in December and January from last season. Brady Fred also says, Cade doing these things makes me excited for the future. Knowing that it is all in the hands of Troy Weaver kills almost all of it, though. Pierre Escargot at Da Ethiopian Wolf is responding to the Pistons signing Chimeze Metu for the rest of the season, saying, I'm really starting to feel nothing towards this team. Dot Mike at To The Basket Pod is commenting on a tweet about Amen Thompson and how great he's been playing lately for the Houston Rockets. Tom Mike at To The Basket Pod said, behold, a coach who uses a player according to his strengths and weaknesses. Compare him to Monty Williams, who made that player's twin brother the league's worst perimeter shooter, a corner specialist for much of the season because he was too lazy to actually coach him. Deshaun Blunt at Mr. Black Platinum says, the Pistons had the worst point differential for a season last year. This season, they're 51 points away from breaking that record with 8 games left. Another record to watch for as the season wraps up. Hashtag Detroit basketball. Hashtag bluntly speaking sports. That was about 5 days ago, though, so I don't know where that record stands right now. Dot, dot, dot at CP3Muse. That's at CP, the number 3, MUSE. Not going to lie, I feel like everyone is a Jalen Duren fan until they actually watch a Pistons game instead of looking at the box score. Yeah, we'll be talking about Jalen Duren probably next time at the end of the season. So keep that in mind. Dot Mike at To The Basket Pod returns. Monty Williams doesn't call times out in these situations, talking about the end of the Grizzlies game. He's likely to continue not calling timeouts in these situations, no matter that it's clearly the wrong decision. Why? Because he's a colossal failure of a coach. He doesn't change and he doesn't learn. Get used to it. Jack Kelly tweets out the last 3 games from Cade Cunningham, and Big Dog Pistons at Big Dog Pistons 1 responds. They said they didn't spend money in free agency because they wanted to evaluate the team this year. Hashtag Pistons, hashtag Detroit basketball. Weaver cannot be retained. This is a terrible roster construction build around this guy. It's really not hard. Lob threat. 3-and-D wing shooting. Duncan Smith at Duncan Smith NBA said, it's going to be so funny when the Pistons hire a president of basketball operations so they don't have to fire Troy Weaver. That was from 2 days ago. Keep that in mind. At the Pistons versus the Grizzlies game, Detroit owner Sheila Ford Hemp is at the Pistons game tonight. Hashtag one prime. That's from Bradley Merlo at Bradley Merlo. Beef Stew Fan Club at Stew Fan Club quote tweeted that. Make the purchase. Halbridius, at Halbridius, that's at H-A-L-B-R-I-D-I-O-U-S. Tosun has had some up and down performances for Detroit, but I still really like the idea of having him, and the flashes of it working have been very promising. Roden, frankly, has been just good every time he plays. I second that. I like both guys. Eric at Eric underscore IKYG. You guys bash Cade because of team record. Okay, but how can you watch him play and not see a future superstar? You guys are casuals and you know who I'm talking about. Eric at Eric underscore IKYG also tweeted out a Cade Cunning apology form, which I'll post a link to here in the description. Definitely go look at that and go ahead and sign this, is what Eric says. Go check out the Cade Cunning apology form. Dojumars at Dojumars, that's at D-O-E-J-U-M-A-R-S. He's quoting a James Edward III article from one day ago. The likeliest scenario to me is that Gores and Co. hire someone in a president of basketball / team president role who will be above Weaver and have the final say on roster decisions, leaving Weaver to be involved, but not necessarily have the final say. So it's funny to me 2 days ago, Duncan Smith saying, it's going to be funny when they hire a president of basketball operations. And then one day ago, this James Edwards article comes out. I wonder what Duncan knew. Lazarus Jackson at Laz Chance, that's at L-A-Z-C-H-A-N-C-E. If the Pistons hired a president of B-ball ops, does that person also got to listen to Arn Tellem's opinion or nah? And then he quote tweeted that tweet saying, I have been reminded that Tellem is also a minority owner in the Pistons, so the answer is yes. Dojumars returns saying, if you complain about every coach and blame things on the coach over and over, you're going to sound like the boy who cried wolf to me. I'm sorry. Casey was the problem. Now Monty is the problem. When's it going to be the players and the guy who gets those shitty past players? Malachi Tribe, one of two Malachi Flynn accounts out there to the moon right now. That's lit up on my head. I don't know why last time I read one of his tweets, I said light up on my head. And then I looked at him like, oh, it says at lit up on my head. So at L-I-D-U-P-O-N-M-Y-H-E-A-D. Malachi Triumph says, no one saw the vision. Not one except me. Take the path less traveled, folks. Yes, Malachi Tribe. You go celebrate. Talk your trash, man. Our own data-driven Piston fan here at D underscore Pistons underscore fan tweeted out about the James Edward article, James Edward III article. Though the Pistons will have the worst record in franchise history, they will not hold the coach or GM accountable. There were rumors of having too many decision makers. Tell them the solution is to add another person, president of basketball operations. That is pure stupidity. Amari Sankofa II at Amari Sankofa. That's at O-M-A-R-I-S-A-N-K-O-F-A. Monty on Flynn, quote, he just works on his game. He's in the gym every morning, pretty much an hour before practice. You saw it tonight on his 50-point night. All those shots that he made are shots that I see him work on every day, unquote. Jackson Lloyd at Jackson Lloyd NBA said, Jaden Ivey is one of the poorest guard defenders I've evaluated this season. Don't take that too pointed, but it's rough. I get why he was playing 20 minutes per game earlier in the season. We'll circle back to that one at the end of this episode. Wiso at Detroit underscore Wiso. That's at D-E-T-R-O-I-T underscore W-Y-S-O. Last season concluded without Cade, but it was okay because Jaden and Jalen looked great. What happened? There's no way this is all on Monty, right? Don Mike at To The Basket Pod again. This level of defensive effort from Duren hurts to watch, and it has become far too common this season. If he cannot be bothered to try on defense, then he cannot be the long-term starting center for this team. This has become a pressing question at an unfortunate time. Again, I'll link out that tweet in the description because he does put film along with that tweet. Jasper Apollonia at Blade Cunningham tweets out, calling Troy Weaver or anyone in this front office a scapegoat for the Pistons' failures is insane. If the GM isn't responsible for the abject state of this team, then who on earth is? Laz Jackson at Laz Chance returns again. The JD, meaning the Jalen Duren MIDI, is his, this game doesn't matter, let me get this rep in. And if you don't care, why should I? Nick at NSITTO2 tweets out in response to a Ringer mock draft that was recently posted, which has the Pistons at number 4 overall selecting Dalton Connect out of Tennessee. And Nick responds to this saying, if we win 12 games to land Dalton Connect, I'm never opening this app ever again. Hiro at Hiro Beats, that's at H-I-R-O-B-E-A-T-S, says, Kevin O'Connor thinks we'd pass on Risichet, Madas, Holland, Dillingham, and Shepherd, and Cody Williams for Dalton Connect. He really is really cooked. Albertius at Halbertius, that's at H-A-L-B-R-I-D-I-O-U-S. How many bad JD, Jalen Duren, ISOs do we need before this coach pulls him aside and asks, what the fuck? And Hiro again responds to this mock draft with Dalton Connect at number 4. People were so quick to dunk on us that they didn't realize why we were upset about Dalton Connect at 4. I'm inserting that part. There's no question that Dalton is a good fit. What was ridiculous is how many better prospects we would have passed on in this scenario in order to select him. Andy, your response to the fans.
We got some pretty smart fans and we got a pretty stupid organization. That's pretty much what it comes down to. I mean, I wish I could be nicer about it, but nothing makes any sense. And I stopped doing like the lineup rotations around game like 71. They gave minutes to like I think 20 minutes to like Buddy Boeheim, and I'm like, I'm done, I'm out. It's the same thing I did last year. Once we got to Buddy time, I'm like, time to go. And it's hard because now I've actually stopped watching the games. I tried to watch the first quarter of the Memphis game and I was like, all right, I can't do this. But it's just hard now because these games are actually meaningless. Later, we'll talk about, you know, Malachi Flynn's great game. You know, congratulations to him. I'm happy for him. But it doesn't mean anything. Like, if you look at the lineups, even the lineups of other teams, unless it's a playoff team that's trying to win a game, other teams are throwing weird lineups out there, too. You can't really take any of this basketball seriously. The problem is some of the stuff Jalen Duren's doing is really ugly. And you just question, like, what is going on for future development? But the whole thing is an ugly mess. But we should probably, hire another person into the organization that we won't hold accountable for anything. That sounds like a good solution.
So, of course, Andy here is responding to the James Edward III article of The Athletic. Can you go over the highlights of it? Because I did not read the full thing. Honestly, most of the responses and the things that I saw people pull screen grabs of and post on Twitter made me very upset.
So, and most of this is things, you know, maybe James Edwards III has heard a little bit about or just rumblings or rumors about. And some of it is just his opinion. But just some of the ideas that he mentioned were that, you know, he doesn't think that Gores is actually completely out on admitting he made a mistake and, you know, moving on from Monty. Like, that could be an option. But he also said that, you know, he sees an option of giving Weaver another year to see if he could fix the mess. And he sees a realistic opportunity to maybe hire a basketball operations, put someone ahead of Weaver for being in charge of roster construction. But the thing that I just think is so hilarious about all of this is we seriously have no clue right now who's in charge of playing time and roster construction. And if you look at from the start of the season to Ivy coming off the bench and Killian starting, Killian getting waived, some of the trades, I can honestly say I have no clue on who's really in charge of making final decisions on who's going to play, roster construct, any of that stuff. Like, if someone could write a story and tell me that actually these were Monty's decisions, and I'd be like, okay, I guess that's what's going on. Someone could tell me that, no, these were all Weaver's decisions and it was against Monty's will. Someone could tell me Gores is actually the one who's sitting down and writing down the rotations. All of them could be possible, which to me is like completely ridiculous, but it's great if you have a job there because you have no responsibility as far as being blamed for it. Because you could say it's actually somebody else's fault for the problem. But what we do know is this will probably be the worst record in franchise history. And instead of firing someone, they're going to hire someone. But getting back to like James Edwards III's article, I mean, just reading it, and looking back at when they hired Monty Williams, in the offseason. They had three candidates that were almost what we thought Kevin Ali was going to be the coach. And then Monty came out of nowhere when Gores decided. Because of that, honestly, all these articles don't mean much to me because anything is possible in a very negative way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And real quick, Kevin Ali stands at 9 wins for his interim season with 5 games left. So there still exists the possibility that he could have more wins in his interim season than Pistons in their entire season, which would be hilarious and sad all at the same time. What is the president of basketball operations, Andy? Do you have any idea?
So I do have this question in terms of different organizations. I do believe they use different job titles differently in terms of, in some organizations, the president of basketball operations is, in the end, the man, the guy who reports basically to the owner, and he's in charge of everything else. I do believe in some organizations, that's the same title that they give the general manager, that they're actually in charge of those same things. So, and I'd have to look at a bunch of different teams, you know, organizational charts and see whose names are in what positions to see how many different teams even have a president of basketball operations that's in charge of those things, or whether that's just someone who's in charge of stuff that deals with the arena and, you know, promotions, marketing, like that sort of stuff, not necessarily the basketball product in terms of players, rosters, trades, those sort of things. So I think there's a gray area there.
Yeah, from my understanding, and you're right, most teams use different terminology for different things. But the examples that I can think of are like Phil Jackson was the president of basketball operations for the Knicks when he was there, and Steve Mills was the GM. Pat Riley is the president of the Miami Heat, and then they have GMs and assistant GMs under him. And the other one that I think of here is Jerry West. He's been like an executive board member. He's been like an executive in a couple different teams now. He started off as the GM of the Memphis Grizzlies, I believe, when he first started. But then when he went to Warriors, when he went to the Clippers, all of a sudden he became like closer to ownership and oversees the bigger picture. And get into kind of technical terms, but from what I've been explained is the president of basketball operations, or the president oversees the macro level things of like ticket prices, roster moves, things in the arena, marketing. Like they see over pretty much everything that has to do with the team. Whereas the GM is just concerned about roster construction, from getting free agents to scouting and drafting guys. That's my understanding of it. But like you said, every team is different. So I only break down that difference in my understanding of it because I think the point of it is to bring in somebody like Jerry West, like Phil Jackson, like Pat Riley. That's normally who is in that president role. But that highlights the problem that we've all said and that you're laying out here is like, whose decision is it? It seems like the environment that's been set up is to deflect that to somebody else always. And even the hiring process of Monty, like the whole refereeing comment between Gores and Troy Weaver, is like, okay, this is clearly there's nobody that made the final decision there until Gores put his foot down and said, I'm the owner, which says my conjecture there is what I assumed happened. But I think that's the logic behind it, but it's a stupid logic. Why is it stupid logic? Like many stupid ideas, many stupid season. This is up there in contention for like the stupidest idea.
So if I'm trying to come up with logic behind the stupidity, my guess would be it's bringing someone in so that when that situation, so that situation can't come up again, where it's like, this is the person who is in charge of the final say of basketball things. And it's basically Gores admitting, okay, Weaver, my hire of Monty was bad. It was wrong. So I'm not going to fire you for that. But I can't let you keep making decisions. So I'm going to bring someone else in to make decisions because I can't fire Monty either because I got to pay him for the next 5 seasons because it's guaranteed. But we'll bring in someone else to kind of sort the mess out that we have all made. But again, I don't see how that actually creates a solution unless you're bringing someone in with the authority and the respect to actually make everything work. And I think that would be so rare in this situation because we can't even see how Monty and Weaver are even working together based on the roster he gave him, based on the playing time and the minutes and the roles he gave out, and then the players who were traded and then waived later. Like, I don't think those two can work together would be my assumption just based on watching that. So I don't know how adding in a third guy is supposed to make all that work.
Yeah, if you're out there laughing and or confused, that's the point of this. Like, how does this make an already messed up situation? How does it fix it? The thought, again, the logic behind it is that we'll bring in a Pat Riley. We'll bring in a Phil Jackson, unfortunately. Somebody like that, to where everybody shuts up when they enter the room and what they say goes. But again, I don't know who said this. I'm sorry, I forgot to bookmark your tweet, but they're like, so Gores is like playing nice guy now to where he doesn't want to fire anybody is what this sounds like. And I was like, oh, that sounds to me like the most, I don't even want to call it sound, but like the truest statement out there is like, okay, Gores either doesn't want to fire them because he doesn't want to admit he's wrong, or he did that. He doesn't want to be seen as the villain or the bad guy firing one of these guys. So he's going to bring in somebody like Phil Jackson to step in there and be like, you know what? I don't care what people think of me. I'm going to make the decision that I think is best. And I've been around basketball enough. I'm pretty much bulletproof in terms of my reputation. That, yeah, if this is what I think is going to happen, I'm going to do it. And who cares what anybody else thinks? That's what it seems like to me, is Kors wants to hire an actual bad guy now instead of being a responsible adult and stepping up in there. And I've heard this from a couple of different people of like, why would Monty be more on the hot seat than Troy? That to me makes more sense, only from one perspective, and that's Gore's perspective. Because to me, Gore stuck his neck out for Monty. It wasn't Troy at that press conference running things. It wasn't Troy that gave him the richest contract at the time for a coach in NBA history. Go back and watch that introductory press conference with Monty Williams. Gore's made a gigantic deal out of it. The whole team showed up. There was a big hoopla. Monty Williams, you know, said, oh, he's going to take care of my wife. I'm so happy for this, whatever. And it was mainly Gores that spoke, especially at the beginning of that press conference. I think the reason like Monty would have more of a hot seat is because Gores is embarrassed, because this is what his big move returned. And the other part that factors into it to me is the fact that Gores sat down with Monty and they had discussions about rotations. I don't see how that can't be something that makes you upset at the owner, as an owner. Like, the fact you have to do that to be like, play my fifth overall pick. And then depending on how, you know, Monty responded to that, maybe it made Gores more upset that, oh, I sat you down, I had this conversation with you, and then you didn't do what I wanted, or like you misinterpreted or whatever. Those things seem to me at least something you could track that would be like, oh yeah, I can see why Gores would be more mad at Monty, and why he wouldn't be mad at the guy that put together all this trash just as much is baffling. But again, this is more of like a reputation thing, I think, for Gores, to where he's the one that stuck his neck out for Monty. And this is supposed to be 100% his hire. It was the one that he paraded all offseason, the one he handed out the big check for, and it's been this bad. And maybe behind closed doors, Monty's like not listening to him or brushing him off or misinterpreting things. That's the only part of it I'm like, okay, I could actually see that being a thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I forget who had the tweet, but somebody tweeted out the Memphis Grizzlies and how their coach has been able to band-aid everything together. And I mean, I think they have almost twice as many wins as the Pistons do this season. And they've had more injuries, more lineups, more everything. I mean, true, I do believe they have more talent, but in no way at all has Monty helped the situation in any way. And I believe going into the preseason, almost all of us added a couple of wins to the season win total based on Monty Williams and his coaching. I don't think anybody said, you know what, I'm going to bet the under because I think Monty's coaching is going to cost the team, you know, 5 or 6 games. Like, nobody said that. I didn't say that. I didn't think that was possible, but here we are. And, you know, and James Edward III did mention it in his article where he talked about, you know, reasons for, you know, possibly Monty getting fired were the Killian Hayes and Jaden Ivey thing. And then, you know, not staggering Cade and Ivey, which still doesn't make sense. But I mean, to me, everything is still just a mystery, because in all the stuff we just said, we haven't mentioned Pelham's name, and we really don't know actually what decisions is he responsible for and what role did he play in those things. And, you know, you look at his connections as an agent, and then you look at, you know, players we traded for and then waived, like Gallinari and stuff. And it's like, oh, well, maybe that's, you know, his role in this situation. So the whole thing is just a mess. I mean, the easiest thing would be fire everybody, just send everybody out, start with a whole new fresh, clean slate and build from the actual, you know, ground zero. But we know that won't happen.
Yeah, it's funny when you said that I think that the Grizzlies have twice as many wins as us. I was like, oh, I think it's like a 10-1 difference. And then I double checked. Pistons have 13 wins. The Grizzlies have 26. So it's true. And it could be a little bit further of a gap by the end of the year. Yeah, there's your difference in coaches, for real. And yeah, the easy thing, not necessarily the easy thing, the ideal thing would be to say, okay, the guy I've had 4 years, this is what he returned, let's fire him. Oh, the coach that I thought would improve this roster actually made everything worse. Okay, let's go ahead and fire him. Anybody that had anything to do with that, that gassed me up as the owner, that told me all these things of how it was going to work out, anybody that told me that, they're fired. And we start over from square one of somebody that can come in and see the mess, be honest with it, and then go from there. That's what should happen, but it sounds like that's not what's going to happen. And it's just insane to me. And insane to us, like any other thing. If you had somebody say, okay, I'm going to build you a home, you paid them this money, they laid the foundation, and then 4 years later, the wood is all rotted, there's not even like drywall up, you know, it's like, come on, think about it. Think about it in any other walk of life. If 4 years later, whatever time frame you think is the right time frame for something to return good on the investment, and it's this bad and it's gotten worse, you fire him. You don't go with that same person. I'm not letting that same fool, that same contractor build my house. Just like I wouldn't want the same fool and the same GM and the same coach trying to fix what they all broke. And it's hard to talk about this in the midst of something like Malachi Flynn's 50-point game. I want to say this out front. We want to celebrate it, but it's going to be hard to do. So let's celebrate it at the offset. I mean, I've always been a Malachi Flynn fan. I know I'm a Lobo guy, and obviously San Diego State just pounded on us for such a long time. But I've always respected their program, and I've always wanted Lobos to mirror it because of how they build around defense. I mean, Steve Fisher was there before Brian Dusher, and that's what they preach is defense first. And just being able to be physical on both ends of the ball. I thought Malachi was one of the few guys that ever came in at San Diego State and had like a good offensive identity. And it was brought to my attention recently because I forgot about that draft, but that was the draft class that was cut short by COVID. So he didn't even get a chance to like go play in the tournament and really, you know, have standout performances and stuff like that. So that was also robbed of him. So it's nice to see him get a moment like this where he does get to shine. He does get to have his jump shot heavy game really highlighted and just go for it, which is what we've been criticizing guys further down the rotation and even some guys in the starting lineup where it's like, just fire him in. Who cares? Who cares? 13 wins. Like, you got to step up and be aggressive and go take it. And Malachi Flynn did in this game for sure.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. I'm glad he had a great game. I believe it was in high school. He said he scored 49 and the coach pulled him before he could score 50. And he said he's still holding a grudge against that coach. So I'm happy he got his 50. I mean, that's great. And it sounds awful when I say it, but it doesn't really matter, like, for the team. Like, and it's nothing against him. I hope he does well in his career. I hope he finds a place. But if the Pistons re-sign him as a guard, does that really make sense for this team? Like, I don't see where it makes sense for this team. And I don't even understand why he's playing. I mean, it's like, why isn't Jared Roden getting all those minutes? And I know people are going to be like, yeah, but we're trying to win these games. Like, I don't get it. Like, you're trying to win these games because you don't want to be embarrassed because of how bad everything is. Well, at some point, you just have to face reality and say, all right, this thing's broken. Let's do the things we have to do right now to start making things better. And that's trying to see if any of these young guys deserve a spot on the roster next year. If any of them can be a bright spot, like other teams find, like, yeah, that Memphis team that they just lost to, they play again tomorrow. Like, yeah, they found, what is Vince Williams? They found, like, you know, they drafted Gigi Jackson. Now they're giving him minutes. Like, that's what you do. It's not about, because this Malachi Flynn game, does it change my opinion of what he's capable of as a player? Sorry, it doesn't. He had a great scoring night one night. A lot of NBA players can have a great scoring night one night. Sadiq Bey had an awesome scoring night for the Pistons. I mean, and he's more of a scorer than, you know, a lot of players. But look at his season this year. He's had a pretty rough season before his knee injury. I hope he has a great recovery. I'm still a Sadiq Bey fan. I'm sad from the trade. But, you know, moving on, it's like that happens. NBA players are good, but it doesn't change my opinion of his fit on this team, whether or not he belongs on this team, and just in the future direction. And that's what makes basketball this time of the year so hard, is because so much of it for the Pistons is pretty meaningless.
Yeah, it's like you celebrate the player, but Troy Weaver and company have just ruined it in these regards, where the first thing in my mind is always like, oh my gosh, what contract are they going to try and give this guy now? Because we've seen it with James Wiseman. It's what people fear with, it's what we've seen with Marvin Bagley. It's what people fear with James Wiseman. And it's just like, oh man, I hope they don't use this as a reason to overpay him, which is not something we want. If you're telling me he's coming back on like a minimum deal as the third or fourth guard, fine. Yeah. Great. Like, let him continue to apply his trade here. I think if anything, that's what that 50 point game showed, is like somebody should still give him a chance further on down the lineup, and he should still, you know, stay in the NBA at least another year or two, which I think before that 50 point game, if you look at his numbers, he's not a great passer. He never shot the ball consistently from three. Like, those are the things that really hold him back from being a successful NBA player. And unfortunately, he does have the issue of being drafted right after Peyton Pritchard and way before Trey Jones, guys who've already found their spot as backup point guards in the NBA. Malachi essentially needed to be what Peyton Pritchard is being able to pass at that high level, being able to shoot at like 39-40% from three. And then you live with those defensive deficiencies. And I hate to like diminish the young man's accomplishments, but 6'1", 175 point guard, that's not what this team needs when it already invested extra draft capital in a Marcus Sasser, who himself is an undersized point guard that they clearly wanted to invest in and place ahead of somebody like Malachi Flynn. So fantastic for the young man to be able to score in that regard. But I just really hope it doesn't turn into the Pistons overvaluing him and making him a priority, because then it would definitely send their logic into like not even being logic anymore. Because the last guy on this Pistons franchise that scored 50 points, Sadiq Bey, after he scored those 50 points, they traded him away. It did not matter. But then you want to bring back this guy who's shown less than Sadiq. Because he scored 50 points, it would be odd. And again, it's just like Troy Weaver and what he values and how he evaluates players. That's the part of it that's just like, ugh. And the other part of it to me was, we read the quote from Monty, from Omar Sankofa, of Monty singing Malachi's praises. And immediately that ruined it for me, because I was like, oh no, if they bring him back, is this the next Killian Hayes where he's getting like 30, 35 minutes a night over Jaden Ivey? This team and who's running it just ruins things like this, because it just makes you fear like, oh, are they going to use this as evidence to say we were right and then overvalue the player?
Yeah. And that just ties back into their decision-making, because, you know, there was a rumor that Killian was going to be traded before the season started, which actually makes sense based on the roster construction of getting Monte Morris. But then they said that Monty Williams wanted to see what he could do with Killian, so they didn't want to trade him. They wanted to keep him. And so, like, is this the type of thing that happens again where he's like, oh, Malachi Flynn is a good worker, I want to have Malachi Flynn back again next year. Like, this is what I want. And those are the sort of things that is kind of like, who's making decisions? Who's in charge? And why things like a 50-point game can actually be a problem. And that's why a lot of times I like to look at someone's entire average, because you take out the good and you take out the bad and you combine it all together. And it's like, this is actually who you are. Because I'm sure if you look at the field goal percentage, you look at the numbers, if you remove this one game, it's going to make him be look like a different player. So, yeah, congratulations, Malachi. I'm happy for you. Happy you got your 50. Hope you find success somewhere, but not on this roster next year.
Yeah, and if I were your agent, I'd be steering you clear of here, too, because there's obviously not a spot for you here. If they're going to tell you that, then they're lying. They have three guys that they've all drafted in the first round. Two of them are top five picks. Like, come on, man. Keep it real with yourself, unless you want to fight it out here for like a G League spot, or you want to take the gamble everybody gets injured again or something like that. There's no spot for Malachi Flynn, unfortunately. So congratulations to the young man. Like we say, we wish him the best, and hopefully he can find a spot where he is able to have more opportunities like this. We just don't see it in Detroit because of how things have shaken out and who this team has prioritized. It made it clear who they're prioritizing right now. Two of those guys they prioritized, though, to me, the 50-point game made me sound the red alarms on Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren. Now, I want to begin this segment saying, yes, I know it's one game. And also, I want to acknowledge that maybe these two are more hurt than we realize. To reiterate what we said last time on the podcast, like the training staff, there seems to be something up with this training staff with all the injuries and stuff going on, putting guys out there like Quentin Grimes, who apparently aren't that healthy. And then they have to yank them later on and be like, oh, let's just shut them down for the season. I wonder if that's happening with Ivy and Duren. Because, man, while Malachi was shooting 50, what were they doing? What were they doing?
They had some rough games. Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm an eternal optimist, but I'm not out on Duren and Ivy, and I'm not going to let, and not that they've had great seasons, but I'm not going to let how bad they've been recently make me think even worse of them, because right now I'm not using this basketball that we're watching from like game probably 65 on. It's to me, it's like completely meaningless. It's irrelevant. I mean, unfortunately, it's probably giving them a lot of bad habits. It's reinforcing some bad things mentally. It's probably horrible for them, but I just don't get, like, for instance, I don't understand why Ivy's still shooting all these threes. And I understand right now he's even struggling to drive to the basket and finish there. I think he's in a really, really rough spot right now. Like, he has not been good. And I get that. But I'm not going to change my opinion and panic on him based on what we're seeing right now. Because I tried to watch the last game and I couldn't. It's just the basketball is so bad. It's so ugly. I'm like, there's so many other things I would rather do than punish myself by watching this.
Yeah, my counterpoint to that is, has Cade done this at all this season?
So I agree with your counterpoint. And unfortunately, it also makes me kind of reinforce what you just mentioned about the medical staff. Because, like, I think I saw a tweet already saying that Cade is out for tomorrow's game. And Cade missed, you know, that last game where Ivy was playing and, you know, Duren was, well, actually, Ivy and Duren were supposed to be playing and they didn't play very well. And it was the Malachi Flynn game in Cade's absence. But it's like, what? Why was Cade playing earlier if his knee, like, if his knee's in a situation where, honestly, game to game, he can decide it doesn't feel right, he shouldn't be playing at all. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And I don't understand how his knee can be in a position where they're like, you can't make it worse, but if it doesn't feel right, we're not going to have you. Like, it just seems bizarre. The whole thing seems bizarre.
Yeah, I don't understand why Troy Weaver or Monty Williams isn't kicking the door down in their medical staff and being like, are we putting these guys out there to hurt themselves? Like, are we putting them out there in the best possible condition we can? Because if not, then we need to be sitting them down. And this Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren thing now, it seems to me, especially like you just mentioned with Jaden Ivey, where it seems like he's not really driving to the basket, that should be a clear red flag that, you know, maybe something's wrong with him because he can do that in his sleep. And then Jalen Duren, I forget, I think it was on Pistons Talk when I was listening to it once, they talked about his ankle braces and like having ankle issues before. And like maybe he's been playing through that this whole season. but it still doesn't make up for the effort stuff. And why I brought up the thing of like, you ever see Cade doing this? Even Cade in his worst games, he's not shying away from the spotlight. He's not becoming a shell of himself. He's still being aggressive. He's still trying to attack. He's still putting up his shots and trying to work his game. That's why this is red alarm for me for Durin and Ivy, is it seems like they're just going into the turtle shell, or they're just shutting it down. The effort is just not there. And it's part of why I'm going to continue to say next season, like, the mandate has to be everybody has to earn their job, because this kind of stuff is not acceptable. Like you said, it's not only the bad habit stuff. It's just showing fight and desire. And I just praise Malachi Flynn for stepping up and saying, you know what? I do not care. I do not care. I'm trying to make this team better. I'm trying to step up and play my game and prove that I need to be here. Meanwhile, number 5 overall pick, number 13 overall pick, who you're super high on, are just sitting out there cruising by, not doing much. Durin can't even manage to get one shot block per game in this game. Like, I don't know what to say, man. I really don't know what to say. It's just concerning to me when guys that have this physical ability, this level, that we know they're good. It would be one thing for me to, you know, go on this rant and be upset and say sound the alarms if I didn't think there were any good. We've seen they can be fantastic. We've seen the flashes. We know their athletic ability and the physical gifts that they were granted over their peers and over their competitors. They have things in their bodies and in their profile that should give them a distinct advantage every single time they step on the court, and yet they don't always use those physical gifts to their maximum capacity. That's the reason why both of them have driven me insane when breaking down their film every now and then. It's just like, Durin, you're a big guy. You have great hops. Why are you not blocking more shots? Ivy, you are such an athletic freak. I don't understand how this doesn't translate on defense as well. Again, not to say give up on them yet, but it has to be concerning. It has to be something that should be brought to their attention. That Malachi Flynn's dropping 50. What are you doing, man?
So that I will agree with. That for me, it's the concern is when you are playing against other bad teams, like, they should be putting up numbers. They should be performing. They should be showing us, like, oh, I'm seeing something here. Because you've got other guys who, you know, are on two ways or whatever, who right now are doing things to just show off, like, hey, I deserve to be in this league. And like, whether or not they believe it, like, every night in the NBA, you're competing. Like, somebody is going to try and take your job. There's only a limited number of roster spots. So you are competing. And with their physical gifts, like you mentioned, they can't be having those clunkers. And when they do have those kind of games, it does make you say, like, the Pistons core, you can't rate it as highly as you thought before, because they're showing us that, you know, maybe they're not those guys we thought they were. You know, that doesn't mean they're not NBA players. That doesn't mean they can't contribute to winning on a team. But it does show us that maybe they're not that guy that's going to take this team from a 17-win team to a 30-win team, a 35-win team, at least not right now. Like, they're going to take much longer, if ever, getting to what we thought they were.
Yeah, and I read a couple tweets tonight about Durin's defensive effort, about Ivy, from Jackson Lloyd, who's not a Piston fan. He's an outside media member. And we're seeing more and more of these outside media members, outside Detroit media members, comment on how bad Ivy and Durin are. We talked about the Sam Mussini Game Theory podcast a few about Durin. Now we have Jackson Lloyd commenting on Jaden Ivy being one of the worst guard defenders. It's becoming a big issue. And hey, what do you know? Kate Cunningham's rookie extension is going to be this offseason. Something has to be done about it. Something has to be done about it where this can't be acceptable. You know, there's that saying of, like, you know, people that love you can handle you at your worst. I think the basketball equivalent of that is, like, best players still give 100% effort, even if they're putting up inefficient numbers or whatever on bad teams. Like, they still go out there and just fire away. They go out there and fight and be aggressive, which is why I bring up Cade. Like, I don't think you can ever put a moment out there where Cade's fight was diminished in the first three quarters and even into the last, like, 2 minutes or whatever. Because there are a few games where I remember people posting screen graphs and even me watching and being like, oh man, Cade seems really deflated. But that was at the end of the game. It's like the clock's winding down. It's the last time he comes out. I think he's really been the only one consistently, who's been healthy all season, that's just had the fight, man. I don't see the fight in everybody every single night. And as the season has worn on now, it's just concerning to me that the two guys that should be the excitement and should be the ones that are ready to step up and that you want to take that next level, they're the ones that are kind of wilting back.
And I mean, it's a different subject, but I think it connects. It also just shows kind of how important role and fit is. Because like, if you look at Bojan and Burks in New York, like it has not gone well for them over there. And, you know, Tibbs has completely different expectations defensively if you're even going to be on the court. And he doesn't care.
He has defensive expectations. That's the point there.
That is correct. But so you know, they have a hard time, you know, getting minutes because Tibbs is like, you know, you're not going to play. And if they're not shooting great and, you know, they haven't been outstanding while they've been there, then there's no way they'll see the court. Like the only reason they're going to be on the court is because of how well they shoot the ball. But if they're struggling, they're not going to see the ball. But if you look at the numbers that they were putting up on this Pistons team, it should also show you kind of where the team was at. It's kind of like Burks and Bojan kind of put like some lipstick on a pig where it's like it made it look a little bit better, but it still is what it is, you know? And in some ways, the team is better without them because of how much of a liability they are on defense, but it also allowed them to function more offensively than the lineups they're throwing out there. So it's, yeah, but to what you were saying, the young guys, if they truly want to be the prospects we believe they are, then they can't be putting up performances like this. That's just, it's not acceptable.
Yeah. And this makes me think about the Dalton Connect F4, the Ringer thing. And I went back and forth with people today on Twitter who really like the pick and want to go to bat for 23-year-old. He'll be 23-year-old on draft night, Dalton Connect. And I don't mind the skill set because that's the point of it. It is like an older guy who comes in, knows what to do. We already know he's a good athlete. We already know he can shoot threes. He's not going to get in the way of these other guys. And I'll do more research into this because I wanted to spend some time on this pod responding to it. But then I was like, no, I need to spend more time to actually look at the history of drafting older guys in the lottery, because that's the point that I've heard from a couple different fans and a couple different like good draft evaluators, is that the history of taking an older upperclassman prospect in the lottery is not a good bet. So I want to actually dive into that and see in like the past 10 or 15 drafts, how many guys were like seniors and what go out in the lottery, see if that is a thing there as well. And also to see the level of defender, because Dalton Connect's not that great of a defender, if that's something that could turn around in the NBA. But that pick and why there are a lot of people that support it speak to like, no, this is the guy we can clearly identify that comes in and does exactly what we want to supplement Ivy and Duren and Cade, obviously. But we're trying to say, I don't think we can think like that anymore. I think passing up on guys like Reed Shepard, like Ron Holland, even though that would be, you know, a nightmare fit, and I understand the shooting concerns and everything, but we still got to find talent. We still got to find guys that have these high-end ceilings that could fit in there that we can buy into. Also, if Ivy and Duren, like you said, aren't at the level that we thought they were. So next time, put a pin in that. We'll definitely start doing more draft coverage because the season probably over next time we do this. But keep that in mind, the Dalton Connect one, because I do think it's an interesting debate. And with the people that I talk with on Twitter today, it was like, I'm on the end of like, no, I don't dislike the skill set, but I hate the upside. And then the other side, people were like, why are you dissing on this guy? And why can't you say he doesn't have upside when he clearly does what we want? So we'll return to that next week. But Andy, do you have anything else to say about our poor, poor Pistons for this first week of April?
I hope they play better. I just hope that Durant and Ivy play better. Sasser knocked out some threes. Like, please, please, guys, play better, because it's getting really ugly. And the only reason I would say just keep doing what you're doing is if it does get people fired. If it actually leads to change, I'm right there with you guys. Keep doing what you're doing, because we need some change.
Maybe it's mutiny. It's a mutiny. The pirates are overtaking the captain. This is strategic.
That would be awesome. Until next time, guys, you can find me at D_D_Pistons_fan.
Hey, it's that time of year we're getting to that makes me the most excited when I do finally get to bust out all the draft stuff more in terms of the Pistons, because it's one of the few times every single year where Pistons fans get hope. Well, we will catch you next time. Thank you so much for listening. And next week, the season ends mercifully for us fans of the Detroit Pistons. They're going to